everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 127. Today we're covering The Legend of Korra, season 3, episode 7, Original Airbenders. Yep, this is, as you may have been able to tell, probably by the length of this episode, which will hopefully not be as long as our other episodes. We will only be covering one episode today, because this season has an uneven amount of episodes, and this one does kind of stand on its own. So, on that note, I guess, if you would like to contact us to complain about the single episode, or to be like, you guys are geniuses for doing this, thank you to the listeners just did, by the way, you can reach us on email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter at re_watchable. You can leave a comment on this post on hypable.com, and you can play with us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So, fun facts for this morning. Well, first of all, I'm joined by two of my fellow co-hosts today. We have fellow superfan Mitch and Brittany, our newbie. And, let's see, what would my fun fact be? I don't know. Mitch, you go first.
Okay, so I'm staring at this delicious vanilla candle. I don't know about y'all, but those things smell so good. Like, they smell better than the real thing. They smell better than, like, cupcakes. And I always want to, like, scoop it out and eat it. It's a bad thing. It's not okay.
Don't do that. Don't. That would be unhealthy.
This is fun, because this is, like, mixing together, like, the food theme that we usually do and what's on your desk theme.
Brittany, what's your fun fact for this week?
I don't have a food or a desk fun thing going on, but I guess my fun fact, I'm looking around my room trying to find a fun fact, is, I don't know. I don't know. Oh, no. This is bad. I should have prepared. Oh, okay. I know. Okay. I got one. We'll go back to Broadway because the Hamilton soundtrack came out last night, and I have officially memorized one of the raps in the song, and I'm very excited about it.
Oh, already? Wow.
I checked my lyrics because they posted all the correct lyrics, and I'm pretty close, so I was very excited about that. I could finally close the NPR stream. Thank you.
Which one?
Oh, I memorized the right-hand man when George Washington is introduced.
Mm, yeah,
I love that.
Good stuff. okay, so I guess I'll just do that Hamilton as my fun fact too. I drove to school on Monday of this week, basically like dancing and driving at the same time in my car to this soundtrack of Hamilton. And but then when I got to school, like, I got up to the part where Washington is kind of recruiting Hamilton, and then I turned it off because I was at school, and then I got back in the car and I had lost my place because it was a stream, not a proper soundtrack, and then I was like, do I want to find this again, or I'll just listen to a podcast for now? So I just listened to a podcast, so I haven't finished listening to it yet. I mean, that soundtrack is like, it's like the Bible. It's like,
I know. Really long. It is really long. But I think I used more of my data this month than I've used my entire, like, time combined, because I just was constantly streaming the NPR version.
No. Lin-Manuel Miranda has ruined lives. I mean, like, you know, in the best possible way. In case anyone doesn't know, we're talking about the musical Hamilton, future
Which
Tony
we talked about
Pulitzer.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's like the new Book of Mormon of the year, or Wicked?
Yeah, but in a way that it's sort of like, yes, not that those shows weren't impactful, especially Mormon, but Hamilton is kind of crossing over, like, I mean, maybe it's just because I follow Lynn, but on Twitter, and I wasn't that involved with the Book of Mormon.
Oh, he wrote this again.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
No kidding, I loved In the Heights.
Oh, he's amazing.
I know, also, you and I share writing love for him, right, yeah.
Yeah, and he's writing Moana. He's writing the music for Moana, which is unbelievable. And, I mean, you know, I haven't kind of seen, like, social media and stuff take up kind of the cause of a Broadway show like this, which, because Broadway is kind of so localized, you know. But anyway, yeah, so let's see. Can I find a segue between Hamilton and original Airbenders?
Oh, I have one right here. Original Founding Fathers, original Airbenders, bam.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, all right, that works. All right, cool. So let's go to the legislature. No. the Continental Congress of Airbenders, which is actually a dictatorship at this point. So in this episode, by the way, major shout out to Ariana, who did this doc on kind of short notice. So seriously, props. In this chapter, Tenzin's tween, who is known as Jinora, wants to shave her head and get tattoos. Tenzin freaks out at that idea. Tenzin's brother Bumi brings his pets to class. Tenzin's sister reminds us, oh my god, what's her name?
Kaya? Wait.
Kaya, yes, Kaya. I knew that. reminds us that she is super fierce, which she is. Tenzin has 99 problems because none of his airbending students are listening to him. Korra is halfway decent in her job, and she makes an appropriate cameo as the Avatar. Pema, oh, okay, right, I forgot. Ariana does not like Pema. Anyway, Pema is not awful for once in her life, and I'm forced to admit that maybe, possibly, she has certain qualities that are healthier for Tenzin's long-term sanity, even if he is missing out on a lot of hot makeup sex. I mean, I have to assume that Tenzin and Pema have a lot of hot sex because they have 4 children. So, I mean, you know.
The mayor acolytes, you know?
That doesn't come out of nowhere, I'm just saying. I hope children don't listen to this podcast.
Oh, I was just thinking that because I was going to say something and I was just like, oh, no. I don't know about our audience.
We have to have lost them by now from the F-bombs we've dropped throughout the years. Yeah. I think we're good.
All right. Well, if you do, thank you for listening and sorry.
I mean, it is a children's show, so I guess that we're kind of like defeating the purpose of like ourselves, but.
Yeah. I mean, not that I've met a single child who watches Korra, to be honest. Well, I met one, but that's it.
Yeah, it's like an oddity. It's like, wow, you actually get it.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just like, wow, you found it? Like, you know, it was on Nickelodeon. Yeah. Anyway, Kai plays with Baby Bison. Ariana calls him a dumbass, and I can't disagree. Bad stuff happens, and it's his fault. Bumi saves everyone with his hot spring spirit, Wi-Fi, and army skills, and we are once again reminded that Aang was a terrible parent. Yeah, not terrible, but definitely... whatever. Okay, so basically the big topic of this almost Korra-free episode is Tenzin attempting to kind of fulfill his newfound dream of rebuilding the Air Nation. Unfortunately, Tenzin doesn't know that much about humans, so he is just really not connecting with the Airbenders, and you kind of have two sides of this equation where on the one hand you do get why Tenzin wants to perpetuate this culture in the way that he thinks is right, because it's hard to it's almost like Tenzin is teaching them out of it's like he's trying to teach them a language that he's only learned from a book, right? Like, he only has what Aang told him. He doesn't have any other information about the Airbenders. So obviously, it's understandable that he's not super creative about, you know, being an airbending teacher. But he's also making zero progress. So, Brittany, how did you feel about Tenzin's methods?
I liked them only because of what you just said. This kind of just sparked something that made me go back to college and high school, where it's Latin. I took Latin for 8 years, and it there's just zero creativity. You can try as hard as you want to make it fun and exciting, but at the end of the day, you're memorizing stuff from a book. It's not like these people grew up speaking Latin or anything, or could have fun traditions and stories to tell. It's just no, you have to conjugate all of these words and just try your best to remember what order to put them in. Yeah. So I guess I get it a little more now, thinking back about all of those classes, Yeah, it's kind of hard to make airbending interesting because they just really want to airbend. They don't really care so much about the history and the legends. And even like when Kaya's talking about like the guru and Tenzin's like this is like it's like trying to explain your favorite show to someone and they don't care. They just want to watch for the hot actors in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, like, it's a little sad because we know that airbenders did have like fun, at least some of them, we know, oh my God. Aang's dead mentor guy. Mitch, who
Oh,
was
yo,
it?
I'm trying to get you here.
I was like, I don't
Guru.
remember.
Guru.
Guru Patik? No, that's the
No.
chakra guy.
Yeah.
I just watched it like a week ago. This is so
Sorry,
bad.
everyone who's screaming at your iPod right now.
Is
Guru dead guy. I mean, they're all dead at this point, but
it
whatever.
Gyatso?
Yes,
Gyatso?
Monkey Gyatso. There you go. That was
Gyatso.
it. Whoa.
I Googled it. Don't get me
Okay. So, I mean, we do, we know that he had a sense of humor. And we know Aang had a sense of humor also. But I think it's probably, I mean, Tenzin's a serious person. There's nothing wrong with being a serious person. It's his personality. And, so it makes sense that some stuff maybe either got lost in translation or he just didn't, I don't know, maybe Aang just didn't, there was so much to teach about the culture that maybe the whole, like, you can throw fruit pies around at people sometimes, like, just didn't make the curriculum. Mitch, any thoughts on Tenzin's unsuccessful teaching methods?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad because Tenzin's always been the stick in the mud. And I understand what that feels like in comparison to my siblings because I think I'm a little bit more fun than Tenzin is in comparison. But, like, they always are a lot more fun than me. And it sucks when they're, like, picking on you for all that. Because you're like, I just want good things to happen. And they're like, but we just want a party, And I feel for Tenzin, but I also think that he's a little bit too uptight for his own good. He's really not going to get anywhere with anyone. Like, I'm surprised any of these trainees are sticking around. Like, the fact that they're asking to go see their family, no. I'd be like flying away on my own air bison to go see my family at that point. They're like being held prisoner by him. It's horrible.
I think they just need like a recess built into their day. Like, like maybe they can play like those games, like, where they spin around on the balls and of air. Like when we
Yeah.
saw Aang, like
Air
with his
scooter.
friends, So like they can like I feel like they need some sort of fun built in that's also a teaching exercise. And
That would help.
yeah.
That would better, like
No, it's true.
recess.
Well, it's also funny because, like, I forgot what I was going to say. So I was going to, right. I mean, Tenzin, like this isn't like crazy, that idea. But like, that Tenzin was probably like the otaku guy who was like, no recess. Like, teach me more dry theory, please. So that like, so it makes sense. It basically. I don't like the way Tenzin is acting in this episode, and I think that the writing maybe goes a little bit too far in making him like kind of nuts. But I understand, given his personality, where a lot of this is coming from. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, especially because he's always the first person to be like, we have to do things by the book, get down to business. So it's not really out of character, but it's just like it's really heightened in this episode and it's definitely noticeable.
Yeah,
It almost
exactly.
kind of reminds me of when Sokka was trying to train the like baby kids that always have to pee, and they're like, "We're not soldiers. Like, leave us alone. I just like want to like throw a snowball all day, like whatever. I'm just hanging out." And it feels like Tenzin like totally got that attribute from Sokka, or probably from their dad directly. It's hilarious when you think about the correlation of those two now, because it's like nothing's changed.
It's funny. I was thinking where Tenzin got this from, and I was kind of thinking it's at least in my interpretation, it's sort of a very purified Katara, I think. Because Aang, like obviously we know Aang could be serious, but I don't think he was ever quite this didactic, whereas Katara definitely could be, and that, she has that bossy streak. So this is kind of that, like with untempered by sort of the not compassion, because Tenzin is a compassionate guy, but I think Katara had like a little bit better of a grasp of human nature than Tenzin does. So,
And I guess it kind of shows because he was always hanging out with Aang and not so much Katara. Yeah. He probably should have stayed home a little bit and hung out with his mom.
Yeah, exactly. Well, speaking of marriage partners, I haven't been listening to all of the other rewatchables, but I'm getting a sense that not everyone likes Pema.
Like, have you heard of the hashtag? Hashtag Pema the homewrecking whore.
No, but I mean, everything I need to know.
I don't like hate Pema, but I feel some peer pressure to not always be on her side. So I'm just like, oh yeah, I guess that makes sense. I should be on Team Lynn in this scenario. But I also don't hate Pema. She's just doing her job. She's in love. She doesn't really care.
I wish she was like, no wonder Tenzin broke up with you. He had some hot piece of ass on the side too. Like, just totally went for it. I really wish she did.
But that's not Pema's nature. She's too nice.
No, Sue.
Oh, Sue.
During that fight, I wish she went all the way. Like, I wish she like brought Pema into this. Because I would have been like, and his new bae is super hot.
At this point, she's his old bae, but yeah. point taken.
Does she have gray hair? Is it animated to have... I can never really tell. Like, the undertones of her hair are supposed to be gray, right?
Who, Sue?
No, Pema.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
She has 4 children.
Right. And yeah. It starts... Yeah, it's probably from the stress of them, at least. But if not... I always try and guess her age, and that always bumps it up a little bit more for me. But she seems like, you know, so the joke is that Nicole, we all think that she's like at least like 20 years younger than Tenzin, and that she was like his student. It's kind of creepy that he just like picked her up, like, I pick this creepy fangirl
so
to be my breeder.
That's like funny and gross, and I'm not at all surprised. But, I mean, I don't think she's that much younger than he is. She definitely is younger than he is, though. Like, yeah. Probably by, around, I don't know, 8 or 10 years, probably.
I've known couples to have, I think, like, 15-year age gap is the largest that I've seen for, like, long-term married couples in my life. And they seem to work pretty fine. Like, you stop noticing past the age of, like, the younger's being 30, I think, and then it starts to really not matter. But still, that's like the older is like, you know, 45, 50. There's a big gap there. So I mean, it's funny too. I don't know what Ariana was about to rant about in our doc, but I find it really interesting that this is like the first time we see them kind of like become intimate in a way. Like, you know, when she kisses him and it's almost sexy, but I don't want to like it. And then she gives him this pouty face, and I'm like, there she is. That's why I don't like her.
Well, I guess I'll read what Ariana has to say. She says, guess what? Pema is also not awful in this episode. I am shocked and a little horrified because I ship Lin's in 5 Eva, but also the pragmatist in me is forced to admit that Tenzin and Pema have a much healthier relationship, if only because Pema is such a manipulative bitch since she knows what buttons to press to keep the peace. So I don't always agree with every part of that language. But I mean, I do think that this is one of my favorite things. I don't remember if this is their first time having a conversation like this, but there are, I think, a few coming up where Tenzin and Pema kind of talk adult to adult and, you know, and spouse to spouse. And I find it really refreshing. And I do think that, for as little attention as their marriage is given, I think understandably, because it's a kid's show, they work for me. Like, I get why Pema just doesn't annoy me. Like, I admire her for still having like a sense of humor and, ability to like function, since she has quite a lot on her plate with, you know, 4 extremely, rambunctious children. And,
I mean, Willow alone would drive me insane.
Exactly.
Do you think she has reason to feel jealous toward Lindzen?
Because like, she no, knows I think that that's what you guys are making up in your head, to be completely honest.
No, think about it. Like, just like old times, of course, old friend. Yeah, come on.
No. I think that's not my, you know, I think that Lin and Tenzin, you know, had a thing when they were children because they grew up together and it didn't work out. And, you know, I mean, something that I like about this season actually is that, like, you know, the tension between Sue and Lynn, I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot, but like, it's early in the morning and I can't stop my mouth running. It's not as early for me as it is for Mitch, but I'm just gonna like fly that flag right now anyway. But I, you know, it's not about like the boyfriend or the relationship that broke up. It's like, yeah, that's too bad, you know, but the tension is actually between sisters and, you know, things that happened in that relationship. So like, kind of, I guess kind of the focus on Pema as like this home wrecker, kind of like, I mean, it's funny and I like get it and like go for it by all means. But to me, it's kind of missing the point because it's not like, it's not the point. The point is that like this marriage happened and is, you know, pretty successful and works on a certain level. And, you know, Lynn and Tenzin have, you know, are grown up and moved on, you know? So anyway, that's my speech.
Well, I feel that it always comes kind of full circle when we go back to saying how horrible the dad some of us think Aang was, because it seems that he would have concentrated, in my opinion, so much on having simply just air kids, so such as having kids with an earthbender would produce less air kids. And I feel like Aang would be hypocritical enough to say, like, well, like, I married a waterbender, and that's all cool, because I got you, but, like, you can't mess this up, because I got lucky that I had an airbender, and now you need to, like, go out there and, like, remake this nation. And I could really see Aang just saying this, just saying, like, make the tough choice here, choose the right woman for what you need here.
Maybe. What do you think, Brittany?
I mean, I guess Tenzin really wouldn't know. He needs, like, Aang probably never had those conversations that Tenzin just had with Pema, and I think that not having that balance with the way he was raising Tenzin sort of like rubbed off on Tenzin, and he didn't have that kind of grounding to be like, hey, you have like two other kids at home that you should probably go talk to. Whereas Pema's like, hey, you have all of these people who are really different and need different approaches. You should probably work with them in a different way, because Jinora loves her dad, and she's willing to listen to whatever he has to say pretty much, and is interested in learning about the history and all that, and is basically a master at this point. But in class, he has a Boomy, and he has people who were brought up by the Earth Kingdom people, and I think he just needs to work on his communication skills, because Aang certainly didn't work on his communication skills when he was raising him. So,
and it's, yeah, sad too, because we see such direct results of it. Because Boomy is quite, I mean, even Kaya too. They're both like, you know, like, dad just did not pay attention to us. Like, you guys went jumping around a giant koi fish while we sat at home, and you went to Ember Island and hashtag the beach all the time, and we sat home and like knitted with Grandma Katara. Like, what is there to do if like the Avatar, your father, won't pay attention to you? That's just sad.
I mean, I tend to, I don't actually think that was the way things happened. I think that, certainly, like, you know, Aang definitely devoted a lot of time to Tenzin and to raising him in the ways of the airbenders. But I don't know, like, I don't think he was a neglectful father. I think he, you know, I think, like, definitely, I think those things happened Boomy and Kaya are picking up on, absolutely, but I don't see it as like Aang never paid attention to his other children and gave all of his attention to Tenzin and was never around and blah blah blah. Like,
yeah, no. I think it's more like what Tenzin is kind of doing right now. He doesn't know how to talk to the other two. Like, Tenzin doesn't know how to deal with Boomy in class. He doesn't know how to deal with the people, like, who are bored. And Aang doesn't know, like, how to talk to, like, how to, like, communicate with Boomy. Like, what are their common interests? Like, he doesn't really have that. And Kaya, like, oh, she's okay with her mom. So, like, it's like one of those, like, awkward dad situations where, like, if they're left in a room together, it's just like, so. And then he brings up like an awkward topic. Like, that's the kind of dad I'm picturing from like an old sitcom. Like, he doesn't know how to talk to them, but he has like the one son who's like really good at football and wants to, like, you know,
yeah,
go and be the starting quarterback, and he's like, I'm going to hang out with him. I know what he's going to, like, I know how to talk to him.
Like, I don't think it's purposeful. I just think that Aang really could have taken a better effort to realize that fault, because it seems like it was never really fixed. I mean, I almost go as far as to say, like, it seems like Bumi and Kai don't really know their true father, but, like, you know, Tenzin's so connected to him. He's always talking about him and, you know, what would Aang do? What would my father do? And I just don't think that that even fell through with Bumi and Kaya. And I don't know if this has anything to do with what their relationship was with their father, but it's also kind of interesting to me that both Bumi and Kaya never had children. I wonder if they were afraid that they would have, I don't even know, like, maybe if they would have an airbending kid and then, like, maybe Aang would be too excited about that and even, like, you know, nurture that child more than even them or something.
I mean, the way I see it, I guess, is that, like, you know, well, first of all, like, Aang had plenty of, you know, earthbending, waterbending, firebending friends. So I don't necessarily see it as, like, they didn't communicate. I think this is also, like, a lot of this has to do with Bumi and Kaya's personalities. I think that, you know, they are, they're more independent people, you know, and again, that doesn't like absolve Aang for, like, whatever, you know, for the maybe lack of attention, or he should have paid more attention to them. But I don't know, just the way I see Aang, I just see this as all, like, very realistic and very, like, the kind of thing that would feel like it made sense at the time, you know, and because obviously, like, Katara put up with it, right? It's not like Katara was like, I mean, presumably she wasn't like, you never see your other children, you know, like, we don't, definitely don't get that sense. But I think that, at least I will say that when we met Katara with her children in season 2, to me, it very much seemed like these three, from the minute they were born, never really got along. And I think that the tension between them was exacerbated what happened with Aang, you know? So, I mean, again, not to be like, oh, that's their fault by any means, because their personality is totally valid. But, you know, they're, you know, Kaya went off and traveled the world. Bumi is, you know, was a general and obviously was a wild child from, like, day one. So it makes sense to me that these memories and these, like Bumi's like, I never felt like an airbender. Like, I don't really see that coming from Aang. I see that coming from Bumi. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then this is all flipped around now, because, I mean, yeah, I still have the same perspective that I think that now that Bumi is an airbender, if this had happened, you know, before Korra was born, that Aang would have been so excited. He would have been all over this. He really would have. And I think Kaya would have just been even more, like, on her own. Because I feel like, you know, having some kind of, like, solidarity with your sibling on being, like, the ones that aren't being paid attention to helps, rather than having two that are being paid attention to. Because then I think Kaya would have turned out to be a different person. I don't know if she would have been even a good person. I think she would have, you know, lacked some love or attention there that would have made her not as, I mean, because, I mean, let's face it, she's like Zutara's love child, so she has some evil in her already.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think certainly Aang would have been thrilled about the whole thing. I think that, you know, it would have been almost like a generational thing. It probably would have been very difficult for him to, not that he wouldn't have been thrilled, but, like, if you read the comics, Aang has a very interesting relationship with people who are trying to come into the Air Nation and are interested in that way of life. Obviously, it's different because they aren't airbenders. But I think it's interesting to think about what his reaction to maybe the reality of the thing would have been. And I don't know, maybe it would have been like Tenzin's, in terms of like there's a correct way to do this, and then, you know, and there's an incorrect way, you know, which definitely is something we've seen from Aang. Then again, we saw that when he was 12. So who knows?
Well, do you think in the end of the day that it's weakening the character of Bumi, the fact that now he has to have airbending in order for us to feel that he's important enough? Is that even necessary, and does it make sense? Because it seems kind of strange to me that he argued wouldn't have that genetically if he already had that, quote, untapped within him, that it came within, you know, harmonic convergence or whatever. We still really don't know how that juju worked. But I feel that just looking at it from, like, a character study, it makes me feel like everything he's accomplished was nothing in comparison to the fact that, okay, now he's an airbender. Because, yeah, we get to see him use his skills with, you know, telling Tenzin how to get the troops together, and even though that doesn't really work, that was what he used to be really good at. And I feel like now we're just starting to learn that Bumi is, yeah, he has to take it with stride. I don't know what else you would do, but it just, it feels like it was written in a place that I don't care for. I wish Bumi still stayed a non-bender. I think that weakens also the plot of non-benders are just as strong and powerful and smart as benders, and it's like, oh, nope, sorry, they're really not. We have to make one of our most intelligent and vivacious non-benders a bender now.
No. Okay, so I wrote a piece about non-benders because I love non-benders, and I said that Bumi doesn't really change that much because he... You know, airbending is not the first thing he turns to when he's, like, in trouble already, and we've seen that. It's, like, his mind, and he thinks differently, and he kind of, I feel like he forgets that he can airbend already.
Yeah.
Which is good, and I think that that's the case for a lot of the older people who, you know, can airbend. Like, they're just, like, it's not their natural default, except for that one guy who literally still cannot control his airbending, who, like, you know, just, like, a hiccup and airbends. But I think Bumi is, like, an exception to that. I feel like he's not going to give himself completely over to airbending, you know?
Yeah, and I also don't think it's kind of a negation of his character because we met him after he had already... I mean, obviously, they planned this, presumably, but, like, we met him after he'd retired. It wasn't like we saw him as this general and it was like, you know, oh, I don't know what to do with my life. Oh, I have meaning now that I found airbending. I think that this is definitely a challenge for him, and I think that it's, I mean, it makes sense to me as a way of bringing, like, yeah, it would be cool if Aang and Katara still had another, you know, non-bending child, but at the same time, it makes sense to me that they wanted to use a directly related character to illustrate the whole resurgence of airbending, which, by the way, I, like, have a very clear image of, like, this world. You know when you're, like, when you feel, like, out of alignment and you, like, crack your back and you're like, ah, that's better, you know? I literally feel like that's what the Avatarverse did during Harmonic Convergence. It was like, oh, we've been out of line for without these airbenders. Like, oh, okay, got a lot of airbenders. All right, much better.
You know? Like a really good comparison. I like it. And I felt it in my back.
Well, you know, it makes a lot less importance. That's not proper grammar. There's a lot less importance given to Tenzin even having air kids anymore because they would have come around no matter what. Like, that didn't matter at all anymore. So it makes me feel really sad now that Lindsay didn't happen because it had all the potential.
I really don't think Lindsay didn't happen.
I know. But still, it's still like, it's the news you tar. You have to go with it.
We could have
had it all rolling in the deep. Ooh.
Oh, my.
They could have. Even at that, though, do you think... Like, there has to have been some part... I don't mean to be obnoxious about this. I mean to be, like, as realistic as I can. Do you think that there was some part of Tenzin that was like, I want to marry a non-bender, find someone that I care for that's a non-bender, so that I can have a higher chance of having air kids? Do you think that Tenzin, if that exists, would have been less apt to doing such if there were already if harmonic convergence already happened, these airbenders were already around? Do you think he would have just been like... Well, I really don't even need to have kids at this point. That stress isn't what I need because I can just concentrate on, like, you know, even babying and raising up all of these other airbenders that have popped up.
I have a thought, but Brittany, do you have a thought?
No. I don't know. I got distracted by the Pema thing again. I'm like, wait a minute. Why are we... I'm trying to figure out how we got back there.
Yeah, I guess we should bring it back around. But no, well, I disagree.
Not even just with Pema. Would he bother having kids if he knew that all these other Air Nation people would come around. Like, I know he enjoys his kids, he loves them, but that's a lot of stress for a parent.
But he wants Aang to live on, like, you know, it's like a bloodline thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And this is still Tenzin. Like, I feel like a lot of these conversations forget who Tenzin is, you know, and Tenzin is, like, is actually a great father, you know, and and especially having maybe that connection with Aang, maybe would have been inspired to be a father. And also, like, this idea that, like, oh, Linzen would have had, again, nothing against Linzen, ship it, by all means, but, like, but he's still Tenzin, and he's still obsessed to the teeth with airbenders, you know, so him marrying a non-bending acolyte, which was the closest thing to marrying an airbender back then, makes perfect sense to me, you know, especially someone like Pema, who clearly, like, we get a lot of hints that she, did go against the grain and that her parents didn't want her to join, you know, she's almost like, I wouldn't say a convert to a, well, maybe kind of like a convert to a religion who is, or someone who joins a religious order, you know, and is, I mean, that's exactly what it is. I'm BSing what I'm saying. It's not like that. That's what it is. It is what it is.
You know what it starts to feel like? If you've watched the new season of Orange is the New Black.
I haven't yet, no.
Norma is the one that's mute. So she comes back and you see her backstory and she joins a cult. And she, like, mm-hmm. marries this man because she just, like, is a part of the cult. And it's definitely a lot creepier in Orange is the New Black, but it's the same concept. Like, you joined, like, a religion and then you married a person within that religion because you had a lot in common.
Yeah, or you share goals for the world and for, you know, I mean, anyway, I mean, to be honest, this episode is not heavy on a significant plot, so I think that was a good discussion, but,
it could have not happened, and we would have been fine.
Yeah, I'm surprised we got there. That was good.
Well, so elsewhere in this episode, Kai, okay, let me just pose this question. Do you guys think that Jenora is ready to get her tattoos?
I think so.
No comment.
I mean, at this point in the story, Mitch, do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I think Tenzin's being a stick in the mud. It's like, think of when Aang had them, for instance. Was he considered a master at age 10 or 12? I don't know, but, like, Jenora's, isn't she 14?
I don't know how old she is.
Regardless, I think 13, that Tenzin should look back in that history and just say, like, okay. Because Aang and all his friends seemed to have them for a while. Like, there wasn't, in those flashbacks in Atla, there didn't seem to be a single airbender that didn't have their tattoos. So apparently you're considered a master, or they're retconning that. You're considered a master from a very young age. Although I'm more toward they retcon that and they just pretend that all those little kids weren't masters now.
What? Those kids? I don't remember them having air tattoos, did they? Like when Aang was playing airball and stuff?
Yeah, they would have stuck out from Aang if he was the only one to have them, I think. I think my memory would have been like, oh, red alert, why don't they have them?
I'm actually going to look this up.
I'm curious because it's more important for what happens with Jenora now, because then it could really be like, okay, Tenzin, you're a super stick in the mud.
Screenshots.
But Brittany, do you agree with me there that you think, you know, Jenora should just be able to, like, get them already and just be done with it?
Yeah, I feel like she's proven herself in more ways than one that she is a master of airbending. She's even more so, like, especially with her spiritual connection, I feel like she could be a master of spiritual airbending, if not, like, you know, actual airbending. Like, maybe she can't do that giant wheel thing that Tenzin did to show off to, like, get new recruits, but I'm sure she could have. Yeah, I'm sure she could if she tried.
Yeah, that was fun times. Kind of also talking about that too, while McCall's looking it up, Adiana in the doc wrote that she thinks that Bumi might have discovered his own spiritual juju stuff, just like Jenora, and this was only going to happen if Aang cared more about him. And she's like, did we miss out on Guru Bumi? I mean, I don't know, it's so hard for me to say what I think about that, because Jenora seems like Adiana often says, like this weird Virgin Mary that can just do anything and is always like the deus ex machina to come in and just save the day. So I don't know if Bumi ever would have been able to be written in to be like the other Virgin Mary. It just doesn't make sense. There's only one, I guess, to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it would have been that type of thing, but I do think that, I mean, what I think it demonstrates, and I'm flipping through the, I'm looking at the Southern Air Temple, which I thought was where that flashback was.
Yeah, it's in 103 for Atla.
Yeah, I'm not finding it though. Anyway, is that, you know, there's kind of more than one path to this. You know, it's not just, you know, it's not just Jenora's version of spirituality that right. is real or valid. You know, it's also like just having a plain affinity with spirit sometimes, you know, which I think is really nice. So I don't know. I mean, but again, you know, it's sort of like people doing the best they can. Like, I don't think Bumi is interested in becoming a guru. I think that he is, you know, he's kind of taking on this life because that's kind of what he's doing, but it's not necessarily, I don't know. He's not necessarily, doing a Pema, I guess, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And also,
which is funny because you would think that they would be more like, more used to, like meditating and stuff. Like, I would have thought that Aang would have definitely taught his kids to meditate. And
well, I mean, then we have Zaheer also meditating. He's an airbender, and he seems to have studied airbending in the past. So it's interesting to me that we see Namek connection only from anyone connected to the Avatar in the spirit world, but just simply airbending in the spirit world, apparently. Because I assume that's what he had to have been doing when he was meditating in that little clip that we had from Last Rewatchable. Do you have any comments on that, Brittany?
You know... Wait, so what do you mean exactly?
Airbending has, like, an innate nature to where it's more connected to the spirit world than any other type of bending.
Yeah, I don't know, because we didn't deal with spirits in Atla at all, really. Except when Aang, like, would go to visit his past lives, I feel like, and then there was that one lion turtle that one time. But I don't know, I feel like it's more, the spirits are more involved in this series, so there's really nothing for us to go on except like, oh yeah, I guess because we're only seeing these spirits hanging out with airbenders and like these, like, you know, flashbacks, and then even now they're only at the air temples because I guess they're more spiritual places. Like we don't see them now that even with harmonic convergence, like we don't see them running around the Earth Kingdom, and we don't see them, like, you know, well, we haven't been to the Fire Nation yet, but you know, we just don't see them anywhere else except with the airbenders. And I think Bumi, even before harmonic convergence, just like, I don't know what maybe they're just drawn to him because he's insane. Like, he just gives off these, like, he gives off like extra, like, you know, wavelengths of just like, oh, he's got a lot of energy going on and he doesn't know what to do with it, so we're gonna go hang out with him.
Of crazy. I like to think that in Korraverse, he's like the reincarnation, quite literally, of original Bumi, and that this is just it. Like, this is still him.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know that, like, Bumi died and was, like, waiting and was like, oh, good, they had a kid. Here I go.
Right, like, he was timing.
Yeah, here I go.
Like, he, like, I've been controlling my breathing, Aang.
he, like, took a bite of a, you know, mineral rock and, like, jumped out into a new form.
That'd be great. Like a spirit, like a spiritual phoenix. He was reborn from Katara. That'd be great.
I mean, so anyway, I mean, what I think is part of what I think is interesting about this. And by the way, I found the screen cap. Those kids did not have tattoos.
So they didn't, but Aang was the only one.
Right, because Aang was, you know, Aang was the Avatar, and he was super airbendy.
He didn't know that.
But Aang had them. Hold on, I didn't look at the image that you sent us.
We've never seen Aang without tattoos, unless you count that like teeny little like Jesus picture of him in Avatar: The Fire Lord. right. Come on, that was totally Jesus. Yeah. Anyway,
Didn't we even see him become born? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. When Roku dies, and then there's like this interesting like painting shot of
his parents.
of, well, him sort of, like, being held up, and it's, you know.
God, I still wish I knew more about, like, the woman, I mean, in the original Air Nation, because it seems like they just weren't talked about at all, and I think that Adiana made a theory that they just had, like, crazy sexy raids all the time, and the raves all the time, and that's how they, like, made all these new Air kids. Because you never see any, like, relationships between men and women, and it's just really kind of just glaring to me. I don't know.
That must have happened. I mean, like, you know.
Because, like, Aang never even talked about his parents. He doesn't mention them once. Maybe he didn't even know them.
He doesn't know them.
He doesn't know them because he got sent to, you know, just go into straight into training like the rest of the kids.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that was the way Airbender Society worked, which was, you know, if you think about it, kind of messed up, which is just like, you know, the Airbender. I think you have some extra uber canon sources, by which I mean like Mike and Ryan being like, yeah, so like basically Airbenders, male and female Airbenders, would meet up and have a kid, and then that kid would always be an Airbender, and then that kid would be sent to the temple of their gender, and like, right. You know, but you know, no connection seems to be made about like the like parent, or you know, because there were two, right? So there were two of each. There was a male,
right.
There were like Eastern and Western and Northern and Southern air temples, and I forget which one belonged to which, but I wonder if the mother was like, let's say, an Eastern air temple a person, if they would, and she had a daughter, if they would send that daughter to like the Western air temple. You know,
I wonder if they were like so obsessed with making new airbenders that they had like a queen bee air nation mom.
Okay, I'm trying to make this realistic, Mitch.
And that was it. That's where Aang came from. I don't know.
Oy vey, Smear. This could get really dark if we let it.
I mean, it already is. Just like thinking, like the canon of it is fairly dark.
Yeah. Anyway, baby air bison though. How cute are they?
They're adorable. Did you? Okay. Adiana mentioned this last week on Amazon Instant. There's little like behind the scenes parts of each episode, and I remember when these first came on Amazon, I was talking to you about them, Michal, and they're free for anyone to watch. I don't know that you have to have it in Amazon Instant. So they talked about the baby air bison, and it's really funny because this is like assumedly like the first time they're really showing baby air bison all the time. I guess there was like those ones that Jenora was friends with, but they were like, we don't know if we want to make them like the size of a dog or the size of like a polar bear. Like, how big are these little guys? Because they're just brand new. And I think it's so cute that you have to think about that, because it's like, I guess this is like the first time you've really seen like newborn baby air bison. It's so cute.
Yeah.
Except when the skin of the baby bison is on
no
the back of that guy, that evil, evil guy.
Did he remind you of the Mulan villain too?
A little bit, yeah.
He felt just like him to me, because I feel like he wears like a coat like that too.
I see that. I mean, the other than like baby air bison being adorable, I mean, like this episode is definitely a little. I don't know. I mean, I guess I should just say, like, basically, Jenora and Kai get kidnapped. I don't remember if there are other airbenders, too. I literally watched this at 2:30 in the morning. You know, they get kidnapped by these bison trappers, basically. And who basically don't discriminate between human and animal airbenders. They're like, we can get money for you all. Which is horrible. But then what kind of saves the day after all of Tenzin's like disastrous teachings, which are not at all redeemed pretty much. Well, maybe the hitchhiking thing. But not much redeemed by this episode, is that the airbenders band together and save Kai and Jenora. And Jenora can use her spirit phone whenever she wants, which still pisses me off.
Call me, beat me if you want to reach me.
It's like she has a cell phone, you know, with service everywhere.
But it's the cutest little cell phone.
It is. And I like Jenora. I started to like her less actually after this particular like power evolved, because I don't know. It, for me, just I think I talked about this last time. Does not do it. Like it doesn't have limits. It's sort of like, well, I can't do it this part of it now, but I can do this other part. You know, like if she could period communicate through spirits, I would get that. You know, but like I don't like the.
Well, it starts to feel like the Dragon Ball Z powers, because it seems like they were just trying to find like a new way around, like getting out of any like hopeless situation, to just say like, "Don't worry, we have Jinora. She'll figure some way out to like loophole her way into this."
Which is very un-Avatar-like, if you think about it. Like, that was really not something that they did. I think the closest they came to that was actually the.
Are you say sweatbending?
No, because that made sense. Even though it's like, why did nobody think of that sooner? Right. But because that was just a different use, you know. That was not like, or that was just like, oh, I can use this kind of water. This to me is almost like I initially felt about the lion turtle and the whole de-bending thing, which actually the first season of Korra like hugely redeemed the finale of Avatar for me, actually. Yeah, which is, so I'm not so keen on this because it's very unlike them. It's weird that they keep finding that like the power keeps leveling up without like really any explanation. I mean, like, I guess we have Azula kind of being like, I can fly now, but like she's Azula. So, you know, she's working 24/7 to be like, what else can I do with this horrible destructive power?
I suppose Jinora is just like training, gaining EXP. And that's just like, we're supposed to understand that she's just leveled up and that's done.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, so that I
agree that, I mean, maybe even seeing more of her like solo adventures into the spirit world that I'm assuming she's meditating and taking, that would have helped me. That would have made me feel like, okay, this makes sense. We've seen her really get into this, because like it was even weird when she was, oh, I'm just gonna look at Lake Lao Guy now, bye, and she just did it, and everyone was like, you can still do that. She's like, oh yeah, like no big deal.
And yeah, it's really really convenient, and
it is
kind of annoying, especially when she's like sitting there and she's like, I don't know if it'll work, like there's things like blocking it, like what, the metal is blocking it, like I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I know, but we would have unbottled this bottle episode if they got stolen and really taken over, or even if just Jinora did. And it's really, you know, kind of cute and chivalrous that she wants to save the baby air bison first, but I think I would have liked it if it was like the Earth Queen's revenge, like trying, now all the airbenders have to like sneak in and save her again. I mean, some people might say that's like the same note playing again, but even like an ambush on that truck later on, because this episode has no repercussions on anything else. This is it. It's just what happens here and then you're done.
Yeah. Anyway, so Brittany, did you have any thoughts? Were you ever worried for anyone involved in the bison snatching and human snatching?
I was most worried about the bison in the bison snatching, but I never had any doubt that Tenzin and or Bumi would come and save the day. And I really, really liked Tenzin and what's his name? Is his name Kai?
Yeah.
Is that his name? Yeah. For some reason, I was like, Kaya. And then I was like, no, I think it's Kai. I liked their little moment that they had, you know, because that was a good teaching moment for both of them. But yeah, I wasn't really actually worried about them getting out of it, mainly because I'm pretty sure they're all in the rest of the episode. And if this episode was standing alone, you know, this plot would have dragged out too long, which I am also grateful for, because I don't know how interesting the bison snatchers would have been beyond this episode.
Yeah.
And also,
yeah,
you're more used to people eating animals than humans, or vice versa, because of Hannibal by now. So it probably wasn't as disturbing to you that they would eat the air kids.
Mitch, one day we're going to get through a podcast without you bringing up Hannibal.
RIP Hannibal, which I've never watched. I did want to point out one thing, which was I completely forgot. Crap, it was actually like a good thing. Darn. Anyway, yeah, I mean, do you guys have anything else to say about this? Like, I will say that I did like the the rescue. Like, I thought that was, you know, I liked seeing, I know it's like, it's so tropey and it's so like, we've so seen it, but I think they kind of earned it by not doing that earlier. Like, the training was like a uniform disaster and like unparalleled, like without redemption. And it was really just that Bumi was like, well, we kind of don't have a choice. And like, it, I guess I like situations where characters are like, I don't even care if I'm capable of doing this. It's the right thing to do and I need to do it, so I'm going to do it, you know, which is sort of the position that the Airbenders are in. Again, heavily manufactured, but still. So how did you feel about that, Brittany?
I liked it. I liked the Bumi, regardless of what's going on with him and Tenzin in a bunch of the episodes, like, always knows what the right thing to do is and is willing to just do it. Like, it doesn't matter that Tenzin's been angry with him, he still goes and, like, you know, does his best with his spirit friend to, like, save everyone from the camp, even though, like, he couldn't bend then, and he had no resources with him except a flute and earmuffs, and he just knew that it was the right thing to do, so he did it. And the same thing here, like, his niece was in trouble, and no one else knew about it, and he had this special, like, communication, and he just was able to rally everyone up to a common cause. So I liked it.
Cool. And Mitch, how about you?
Yeah, well, there's one part here that is a kind of a specific note that I want to bring up to Brittany, and I'll somehow avoid actually bringing up Hannibal here. Doesn't Kai seem a little bit off in his ability to simply beat a man to a bloody pulp just because?
Well, I feel like he's been fighting. Like, he only knows real threats. Like, he doesn't, and he knows that he needs to eliminate them, and now he has this extra power to do so beyond his ability to be, like, cunning and fast, you know? Right. He has something else he can kind of tap into, and I think it's more like he's really good at controlling the air when he's bending, but he doesn't know his own strength yet. So, or, like, when to stop. Now that he, like, can have this advantage, he doesn't know how to, like, you know, use the right amount at a certain time.
Because he probably would have killed that guy if it wasn't for Tenzin to step in and say, like, okay, you need to stop. Like, good form, but, like, no, we don't kill people.
Yeah, especially the second time he, like, picked him up and threw him into the car.
I know.
I was like, okay, that's
I know. It feels like so, like, I sit there and I think about, like, what the Nickelodeon censorship team must have felt like trying to watch this episode. And I think this was right around when they decided they wanted to start only airing them online. And I can kind of get why. If there was, like, you know, moments like this, where, you know, Mike and Brian were like, sorry, we can't back off on this, and Nickelodeon would be like, you kind of have to, you know, if you want to air this on TV. And I feel like that compromise had to happen right here, because this episode just starts to get to a point where you're like, okay, like, they're gonna eat these children, maybe, kind of, and they're taking them and these babies kidnapped, and he's wearing the pelt of one of them. Like, it starts to become, I think, even more out of control than the double suicide was, because the show just consistently brings up these, like, more adult themes, and it doesn't stop. It doesn't hold them back. And I'm happy that we still get, I mean, I think, Britt, you're gonna be surprised by the way these next seasons and a half play out, simply from the fact that, I mean, can you agree with me, McCall, here, that there's almost no limit to what the show will do.
And we're about to get there very soon.
We will. And I think that there's one specific event that you'll be solidified in, Brittany, that you'll be like, okay, this is no longer the old Nickelodeon show we used to watch. Like, they've turned a new leaf.
Yeah, this season, I mean, this episode is here and does this definitely for a reason. And God, yeah, I mean, I love season 3, and I think it's really great. And I have to say, I enjoyed this episode a lot more on this rewatch, although I wasn't super paying attention because I was doing other stuff at 3 a.m. But I was like, obviously I was listening to dialogue and stuff, and I found it a lot more charming than I did back when it first aired. And maybe that's just part of, like, you know, watching it as a whole. But I didn't have that feeling that I did at the time where it was like, why are we taking time off to do this? You know, I enjoyed it anyway. But basically from here on out, like, the good stuff of season 3, like, the stuff that's really been like, wow, this is really fascinating and dark and blah, 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 goes, Mike and Brian go like, whoa, you like that, huh? And it's, yeah, you know, kind of Yeah.
Oh, just wait till book four. Book four, like, amazing. There's going to be a moment, newbies, when your jaw will drop to the ground, up and coming for book three. And you'll continue that for the rest of book three. You'll come to the point where in book four, you're going to be, like, numbs to the shocks. Because you'll be like, this is really happening. Like, this stuff, oh, it's, I mean, I remember, like, Natalie was like, Mitch, it's not like Game of Thrones. And I know it's not. But, like, in comparison to where the show started in Atla, it goes and it continues. It's almost, I almost compare it to maybe even like the Septum Cetra or whatever that spell was that Harry uses against Draco, where it becomes like a very dark book from there on out. And you feel like, okay, this is an adult story now. Like we, or even Cedric's death, like you get into it.
Like your series grows up, I should say. I just want to say like hashtag the beach and, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
But yes, there is definitely, this episode definitely does what it does for a reason at this point in the story and introduces you to a few character ideas for, again, a reason. But anyway, I mean, are there any other thoughts? I mean, like, shout out to Cora for being totally chill on the phone.
Yeah,
yeah, good job, Cora.
Yeah. Which is, oh God, so nice, especially compared to season two. It's like, you know, I defend a lot of what Cora does in season two. I really, and I do that genuinely, but it's really nice to see her in this season just be like, okay, I have a little more perspective now. I can grow up a little bit, you know, and like, obviously she's not perfect, but, and I wouldn't want her to be, but, yeah, just
I mean, I did have a hard eye roll when she was like, conflict resolution, it's what I do. And I was like, ugh, not really, but okay. Well,
I think that's why it was funny, right? Because she wasn't really, you know, she wasn't saying anything.
I definitely thought it was tongue in cheek, but it was, it was.
I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. They really just had to make this an episode where Janet Varney was voicing something new because they could have had like a flashback and cheaped it out that way. But I'm assuming in her contract somewhere it was like must say something in each episode. So that's the only reason this scene really exists.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, I like the scene. I think it definitely rounds out the episode.
Well, they did the best they could in the bottle episode to still bring in the main character. I'll give you that much.
Yeah. And definitely, you know, of the Avatar bottle episodes, this is not my favorite. And again, I'm not, like, I don't love the plot of the episode, but I think that, yeah, I mean, when you look at this season as a whole, it was funny because last time when I was talking about, like, the Earth Queen episode, I think that was the one I did, I really wasn't so into it, and I said that that was my least favorite episode of this season, or those two were my least favorite. Mm-hmm. And then I was talking to my brother, and I was like, I actually forgot about that one with the bison. this is probably my least favorite in terms of like just liking it the least. But again, I didn't hate it.
Well, I mean,
I don't know. Maybe we'll discuss our like what we think is like the worst episode of the season or the series after.
Right, or even the two series. Well, you know, I mean, well, the rift still.
Well,
there,
the rift is the worst. I mean, like flying. That's not. There are people who try and defend the rift, and I'm like, stop. Please don't. Like, let's just all accept this, okay? Like, Mike and Brian have publicly accepted that it's a bad episode.
Yes.
Like, let's just not go
like,
there.
It's canon that it's a bad episode simply from
Fire
Island.
The characters have acknowledged it.
They're like, we did that? Can we just not?
All right. So any other last thoughts? I guess I just lied through my teeth when I said this was going to be a shorter episode. I forgot about us.
I know. I was looking at the time and I'm like, wow, no, we did a good job.
Yeah.
I know. Well, we know how to take a bottle episode and make it more interesting.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to our favorite scenes of the episode. Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Jenora refusing to take Tenzin's moodiness anymore and was just like standing up and looking him in the face as best as she could and just being like, no, I am not doing this anymore. So good job, Jenora.
Yeah. Although I will give one shout out to, I think I just meant to say this, but like, I get that Tenzin is not emotionally ready for that. Like, I get it. He almost lost her last season. Like, I understand why he's not like, sure, you could totally be a master. That's fine, you know.
Yeah, but I'm also glad that Jenora gets to be a teenager a little
bit. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I love that she's standing up for it. Like, I think both sides of this equation are working the way they should be at this point. Mitch, what's your favorite part of the episode?
Mine is the only action to actually happen. Boomy and Co. coming to the rescue, especially that one guy, like, you know, acknowledging the fact that his shaved head did something, and like the way it's animated is so cool that it's like a buzz that comes around, and you feel like it's, even though I know what's going to happen, it's really nerve wracking watching that little bit, because it still feels like he's going to get hit by that net, and he like just barely dodges it, and it feels great, like his mustache twitches and everything. I love it.
Yeah,
his spidey senses were tingling indeed.
And I'm cheating and just saying literally anytime there are baby bison on screen, because baby bison are the cutest. And
when they fly and their faces are like in shock, it was so great. Yeah. And their little legs are like going all over the place.
Aww. How to move. So
it's like
cute.
Baby kittens that open up their eyes for the first time. It's just so precious.
Yeah. And I'll actually say that as someone who isn't like a huge fan of the bison as a gen. I mean, I don't dislike them, but like, you know. I don't find them particularly cute. I don't need an Appa plushie, but like those little baby bison, oh my god. Favorite lines. Brittany, how about you?
Mine was from Boomy, of course, who says, "Well, I guess cool is just something you're born with." It was just so good. It was like the best line he's had, I think, in the entire series so far.
And that was actually a very Boomy original line, I think.
Yeah, it's very, and it's very loaded. Like, I feel like it's just, there's a lot going on there, and I loved it. Especially because, like, Tenzin kind of showed up right after that.
Yeah. Mitch?
So, mine's Korra's line of, "We're totally safe, unless we get caught in another fight between Sue and Lin." I love that there's already a callback to that. Like, that was such an epic moment, such a smackdown that, like, we cannot let that go.
Yeah. And I like that as well, that it's like this moment of sure, there are bad guys after us, but like we kind of have like two extremely volatile people right here.
If so, only Tenzin knew that fight happened because of him. Like the final blow was when Sue goes, "No wonder, you know, he broke up." So I wonder if Korra ever told him that. Like, so why would they like really fight each other? Well, actually.
Yeah. Wait, did she say that in the modern day or in the flashback?
Korra, I don't know how to answer that question non-spoilerly, so I'm going to say Korra says this on the phone.
No. I'm saying, did,
Sue says that, like, in modern Sue. Day. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All
so right. That's why I'm like, oh my god, Tenzin would probably be so happy to know that, like, his Baylin is still fighting for him.
Right. So I'm going to give, two actually shout-outs to favorite lines. One was, Kaya was like talking to Tenzin. She's like, "I can never keep all those gurus straight. There were like a million of them. Remember that long, boring story about the guy who never ate?" You know, the story that Tenzin's been telling them. He's like, "Yes, I remember." And I also just want to give a shout out to that line where Tenzin shaves the guy's head, and then the other guy's like, "Ah, I don't want to get my head shaved." And Tenzin's like, "That's fine. It's a personal choice." And the guy who got his head shaved was like, "Yeah." Well,
thanks for telling me.
Yeah. Tenzin is, like, socially inept. It's really funny. All right, so we're going to get into listener feedback now. If you would like to leave us some listener feedback and possibly hear us talk about your words on the podcast, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can contact us in 140 characters or less, or use multiple tweets on Twitter at re_watchable. You can write on this post on hypeable.com. You can come and comment on Tumblr. Do people comment on Tumblr, Brittany?
No.
Okay, so.
You did during Atla, and then they stopped.
So, what up, people? Like, get on that.
I mean, we got a lot of likes and reblogs, but, you know, send me a message. I send Boomy gifts. I don't understand why people don't want to do that.
I love how you're number two in Boomy, like the search on Boomy and for
Tumblr. Yeah, if you type Boomy into your search bar, Rewatchable comes up because I tag Boomy in every post we do.
Perfect.
Even during Freaks and Geeks.
Fabulous.
Oh my god, those poor people who track the Freaks and Geeks tag. And
isn't it just weird that like the one character you loved came and like was reborn in Atla, and you already knew it too, so I guess that feeds into it all, but that's just, I find that so cute.
Well, it's funny that we're all like, "Where's Zuko? Where's Toph? Where's this? Where's that?" And Brittany's just like, "I'm fine. I got my Boomy."
Yeah, I know. He was so old, so the chances of having him come back. But
Boomy, like, in all of three episodes.
I know.
But yeah, so make Brittany's day and talk to her on Tumblr. And leave us an iTunes review. If you rate us 5 stars, then Mitch will be your boom Jew. And we're not going to go into the implications of that.
Will I ever?
Okay. Thank you, Mitch. good show. We have some listener feedback from Twitter. Gordon at Toonie Chopperman said, is it weird that before listening to Rewatchable, I'd never given hashtag Lindsen a second thought?
Yes.
Now it's all I think about when they're on screen. Also, major love feels for Jesse Flower in this ep. It's been hard eyes. Yes. It's been too long since I heard those cries of preteen indignation. And I can't speak for the Lindsen, but I mean, it was pretty hammered home in season one, I guess. But like, I suppose Rewatchable has definitely taken this to a new level.
It's like Zutara all over again. Like, this is the Zutara of the season. Like, it was like one of those things like where people were teasing Zutara when we first started covering Atla. And then when Zuko appeared in that like Oasis thing, I got like chills and I was like, wait, do I have chills because I'm really into Zutara or because people have been talking about it for so long? And now I'm like looking for Lindsen, even though I'm like, wait, do I even care? Like, would I like this if I didn't have this discussion? I don't know.
Listen, Zutara starts from as soon as he takes the betrothal necklace. Teasing her with it after. And he's just like, hey, look what I got. You want to get married? And it's just, oh, yes, of course, Zuko, finally. I've waited all my life for you.
Zutara is a really complicated thing. It's like...
So was Zuko really meant to be Katara's love interest?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean...
Is that canon?
I've heard different things. I've heard... On the one hand, I've heard that, like, Mike and Brian basically, like, flipped a coin, and one of them wanted Zutara, one of them wanted Katang.
You're kidding, no.
I've heard that. I can't source it. I don't know where it's from. But then I've also heard them say, like, no, Zutara was never meant to be a thing. Which is totally valid, but, like, at the same time, like there's definitely chemistry between them, certainly in season one, and, like, in terms of, like, antagonist, you know, and, I mean, he has that... Damn it, he has that line like, you rise with the moon, I rise with the sun. And it's like, oh, my, I would feel that on my notes. Like, you know, I mean,
how many different variations of that phrase do you think are like Tumblr headlines? My God.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know. I mean, like, I kind of got over it when I accepted that the show wasn't going there and was like very clearly leaning on like Katang and stuff. I mean, I've never been into Katang, but I've been like, fine, that's their thing. I'll ship Mane Zuko. That's fine. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, Atlas Season 1, I think that... And it's also stupid because the shipping wars have gotten so intense that, like, it's like you're, like, not allowed to ship Zutara because it's, like, not canon. And it's like, okay, calm down. Like, you know, whatever.
Like, it's fun. But, like, come on, Mikal. You don't see Aang being dead as, like, a wide opening for Zuko to jump right on in there?
Oh, yeah. Totally. I mean, like, I think that they probably... I think they probably hook up. I think they hook up in, like, a friendly, like... You know,
grandma, grandpa, kind of
my wife's dead, your husband's dead. Like, we love each other as friends and have loved each other for a really long time and are going to offer each other sweet, sexy comfort.
Well, that's good. Maybe they'll give Kaya another sibling.
Please don't give me that. No, stop, Mitch. Damn you. Brittany, you want to take the comment on hyperbole.com?
Yeah, I do. So, we have a comment from Daniel Stewart, who says, Bolin's excitement about Toph was so cute, and I love the giant statue of her in Zaofu, which I have to agree, she looks pretty badass. Not as badass as Zuko's statue that we saw earlier in the season, or series. I guess in, like, episode 2, we see Zuko's statue. But yeah, it was awesome, and I was equally as excited as Bolin, because I, too, thought that we were going to meet Toph. And I was like, are we going to meet Toph? Are we going to? And then it didn't happen, but that's okay.
Listen, there's some inequality happening here, because there's no Katara or Sokka statue so far, and that's really disappointing.
There is a Sokka statue.
There's
a Sokka statue in front of the Southern Water Tribe building that gets blown up in that regrettable season 2 plotline.
Yes, but where's right, Katara's right. Then? I know like she's still
alive.
Yeah,
don't know if Katara has a statue, which is
well, Zuko's still alive.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you don't have to be dead to get a statue. So where's Katara's? I want to see her like in the octopus form. Like that's her statue. That'd be so cool.
Maybe she's on the money. She's on the Yuans.
She's demented.
Yeah. All right, so that has been this episode of Rewatchable. We'll be back next week for which episodes are these? I want to mention them because I want to try and remember.
Oh, it's I don't know the names, but I know the second name of it is like the Stakeout. If that helps, Shani. I don't remember the name of the first
TV shows. Where are we? Oh no,
wait. It's 308 and 309.
308 and 309. Mm-hmm. Is 308 the one that they showed in at the second Comic-Con? At my second Comic-Con. Because the first Comic-Con was the first episode of season 2. But then...
No, they showed Beginnings. Oh, I don't know about the year after that, though. I don't remember.
No, that was at New York Comic-Con.
Right.
And I couldn't do it because it was on Saturday.
I could foresee this showing them. Yeah, this makes sense that they showed this like a day before it like, went online at San Diego Comic-Con. That makes sense.
I think, The Terror Within, which they showed at that Comic-Con.
Okay.
And then the Stakeout, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, God, it starts to get so intense for me.
Oh, Brittany, you haven't watched it yet, have you?
No, because I can only watch one episode.
Prepare your feels.
Just prepare your feels. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Please do.
This is intense.
And you watch that trailer, so you kind of, like, you're going to see... Like, I'm kind of sad you saw...
No, I won't spoil you.
I'm just sad you watched the trailer. No. I wish you would wait till the end of the show to like watch all the trailers. Yeah, I think you'd be more satisfied.
Well, I watched that one just because it would like came up in whatever I was looking for on Tumblr, it came up and I was like, "Oh, like they can't tease like, you know, they can't give away the whole thing, but I'm really glad that I watched it after I knew Zuko was back because it definitely gave that away."
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to watch the trailers because we all did. And they have damn good trailers. So, you know, I mean, if you want to stay like totally unspoiled, which I would appreciate too, like, that's cool, but I understand why people watch the trailers. Anyway, I am so impressed with myself that I am like up and talking and have led this episode. And yeah, so we'll be back next week with, you know, the Sith hitting the fan to mix some fandom metaphors. My name is Michal.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Mitch.
See you later, Gators.
Bye.
What I usually say. I say Flameo. Flameo!
Flameo, gang.